thanks a lot for the invitation to come and speak today. I told John, anybody where the hard part is an hour block, and finally a question. If you let me get going, I'll let you go all day. But we'll see how we work our way out. As I get started, let me introduce you a little bit. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Commission on Accreditation and Training, and we are a separate group from NTA, so it's important that when we roll off of this deal, somebody will call them up and have board of directors in charge of Katie. We're a separately incorporated group. Mark Larson from Boston University, current president of Katie, from Ottawa, transition our call in August, where I will take over president. The commission has athletic members as well as public members. Jack Weekly, Jack is the public commission, Leslie Taylor Tech becomes president-elect president. We also have Ray Castle, Hugh, Paula Maxwell from James Stark from OU, Eric Sowers from AT Still, Valerie Herzog joining us in August, our newest as Paul Maxwell's law. We have several position members as well. Joe Gutler from ALSSM, Griesmer from AAP, Monty Kavanaugh from the Academy Family. John Schultz is just coming on to replace Monty as a new commissioner over. But the commission is the board level, and we have a structure of work, and the commission themselves, they are all the ones who are on committees. We also have an administrative member. Mickey Frazier is the dean of the health school. Within the office, Mickey Cuppett is our executive director. We call the press and we have a good staff with you. Ashley Ahern is probably going to work with the accreditation things. Julie Cavallario works a lot with accreditation work. And we just brought in on June for accreditation. Pretty competent staff. Really love working with all of them. So before I get into really here, and from a context perspective, it always helps. And the vision for the KD is to improve health by assuring and recognizing. And there's a lot of things that go into that. One of them, probably our biggest and arguably most recognizable jobs, is that we set the accreditation system the program and offer the program that they do. Our goal is to do so with a process that encourages creativity, and that's not always historically been where that function has addition to. Rather than be pushing behind into all of the programs, forcing you to come in, really much rather be out in front, offering you best practices is a philosophical bent is these days. And creating an environment for innovation and new curricula that prepare for the future in healthcare is absolutely the most important thing. That's really the nature of the athletic trainer. The other thing that we do is provide a premium. A lot of people are familiar with our professional program. The term professional is the term entry level. But a professional program is a program that leads to credential eligibility. That's not the only kind of program. We also create a post-professional program, the public program. At the moment we have advanced programs. And there are a couple of programs under Katie accreditation that Jared will talk about. We also accredit last year resident programs, and three more who are going through the process work, and I expect you're going to talk about residencies. This is a slide that we use in the talk, and I like to call it the lead of lead. It helps you understand philosophically where Katie is. And one of my goals joining the commission was to do a better job of talking about what we think you need so that we actually read adoption. Conversation on programs, see it coming. So some of the things that we believe that athletic trainers need to have a strong scientific foundation, and that is something in the laureate education programs. What we find is as we need more and more curricular time, content of athletes, we wind up out of it. So instead of making biology and physics, and maybe drop a physics program and try to do a remedial lecture on some of the physics you needed, and I don't think that serves our graduates or profession well. A strong foundational knowledge is strong too. Clinical competence. If there was only area that people will express concern, it's their initial people coming to like producing the most knowledgeable new professionals we've ever produced, but they lack the competence and experience to make good. And that is something that we're here and we're working on the department program continuing to talk about ideas on. We believe in producing athletic trainers who want athletic trainers in the profession. The next one here is perhaps the most important to talk about. Anybody heard that? All the crusty old educators in front all know that language. If you're not familiar with that, federal government and national use a hierarchy of providers. The level one provider, fully autonomous. Level two providers who are engaged, supervised, partners in a big role in what in judgment. And level three providers, people who form that are created by others. Now that's not the way that we eat. And that is a very large barrier both to our craft as well as our reimbursement. Having a place in healthcare as a level two provider is the moonshot goal of everything. Another thing we believe in is that we possess the Institute of Medicine Core Competent Health Professional. I have a little asterisk there because IOM just changed, but I'll talk a little bit more about the core competent health evidence practice and care, professional care. So with all that background stuff out of the way, first I want to talk a little bit about analytics from the annual report. There are these at several different clubs. I'm going to share with you because I think it sets the context for where we are. We'll talk a little bit about some historicals on what the thought future has hold over the last 20 years. I will talk a little bit about the degree change, share a few ideas about But as much as anything else, I'm here to listen for questions and dialogue, reading station if you're talking. So some analytics. We have a lot of quality and outcome of professional athletic training. And this is some data from the annual report. Those of you who aren't program administrators, programs for professional programs, you want to. And it includes a lot of information about programs and electronic data from years of starting to track these data. Here's some data from that. 365 programs at this time. We're a little bit higher than that right now. About 3,600 graduates from accredited professional program national. Only 94% of those are now, here in the state of Texas, we practice on standing over the level 40 scores. A number of graduates of our program never practice without that exam, often because of practicing it. This next one I found a little shocking when I got in. Average graduates, so your cohort size, 10.1 students in our average graduate class. And that number ranges anywhere from program graduates per year, all the way through programs have upper 30. As a comparison, cohorts are much smaller. In places like therapy, we said cohort, I call therapy 30. We tend to have a lot smaller cohorts and a larger number of programs. Average student or average program had a 79% first-time pass rate on the three-year average class. That jumps up to about 90% before they get. And standard 11 is the last two bars. You're not doing 11. It is probably the most dreaded scale on the possible change. Standard 11 says accredited professional program is 70-year average. So across any three-year window, 70% of the program. And it is by no means an annual outcome. And you see it's across the spectrum. The standard is not 70. Of the 365 programs, about one-fourth of all programs here were not. Now, last year's annual report included 2 years of data and 1 year of data that's actually classified higher. Because of that, the commission is not putting on probation. You received a letter that said you were compliant with. And we've announced publicly last year that the graduating class 2000, when those data become available, 3 years of data effect, and programs don't meet 70, we put on probation. We actually use the data at Cobra exam. We get brought up again. We will review those and action probably on the horizon. Here's a breakdown of what that looks like. So let me orient you here. I've created silos down here on the bottom. So see over there on the far right, the big yellow bar, our programs, pass rate percent, and this is simply a quantification. So for all of our professional programs, except for program having existed, this is sort of where it profiles out. And you'll see that the single largest stack here, in fact, the top three largest stacks of programs, 75% of all of our programs are fitting right over here in the compliant standard 11 pile. And from here down, the programs who are not. And yes, you'll notice over here we have one program who's passed that they are 0%. That program is actually a volunteer draw closing, but we have some quality disparity. We have a lot of programs who are we have some programs who are struggling. If we look at the borderline group, the group who's between 60 and below standard, there are 45 programs. 30 of those 45 were above 60, a bunch of programs on the cusp of being able to make it. And we are actually very excited to see the data come in. Now, programs are able to see these data, and they can log in their accreditation and look at grades and tell them that where they are, and provided that they've naturally. Usually takes about 5 seconds to roll into the case. So we will probably have the October data right in the number of years. This is the group concerns. In these 24 programs, graduate programs will not pass, so fewer than half of those problems. And frankly, folks, that's put in place, the outcome. Because one of our jobs is public. Really different than the VOC. Their job is tech and employers. For us as educators, our job is tech, and in doing so, let them know how well the program is. The individual listing program, and the individual program, you'll find on two programs on the program website, the one with the programs, and you'll also find copies of all the programs. That's our most web page. So if we break this down between bachelor programs and professional master programs, entry level master. Of the 90 programs, we have 11, 95 of them are baccalaureate programs, one of them is a graduate. And the percentages there really look pretty different. I'm a numbers guy, and I think like odds ratios. We calculated an odds ratio on probability of programs with 11. And bachelor programs were 13 times more likely than non-compliant programs, a pretty compelling odds ratio. If we also break this out into the profile of baccalaureate and professional master programs, one of the things that really jumped out to me is the lowest of programs. Where are our best forming programs? And you'll see that 30% of bachelor's programs are above a 90 pass rate. 86%, again, I'm fairly confident. And just because I am truly a next level number, I like things like scatter plot. This is an interesting scatter plot that we were playing with in Orient here. On the x-axis is how many cohorts, so how big is your class size? And on the y-axis is what is your program pass rate? And some things you'll notice on this, we've got the trend line up there, and this program large, they're likely to have. But I think the real story is to break it down. If you look at our smallest program, our programs to graduate five or fewer students, at the very top, you will notice a whole bunch of programs. There are some really outstanding small programs, but if you look at the whole small program, what you'll see is that we have a lot of programs who don't meet pass rate standards, including programs much larger than down here. If we look at the next slide, programs with five. Again, we see a lot of very high-performing programs up here. We also see a lot of low-performing programs, pretty big spread in both categories. As we continue to move up, what you'll notice here, by the way, the gray line here and below is standard 70. That's not so many programs, not, and a lot of programs doing well. And that continues as you go up to where you get 15, 20, very programs, and above 20, not very many programs in this group. But what you see is that most of those programs are by no means indicating how much have a class. Well, but what this is that somewhere along the way, critical math resource and that produces a stable high, doesn't mean stable high program smaller numbers. The likelihood that we think a lot of our decisions about really tends to fall amongst our programs. So enough on analytics, enough on numbers and quality. A little bit about the rechange from the historical perspectives. How many of you were certified in 1996? Recommendation forward, approved by the board, that really sort of set up a education. One of them was to mandate that a bachelor degree from a KHEP, now we're the accredited program for eligibility for the degree. This was a big deal for all of you who were a part of this. The internship one, the person who was public for that at that time actually received death house over this issue. I kid you not, that's how contentious it was. So the whole degree change going now, boy, this is kind of low key. We were a lot more fired up back then. Other things that were there, encourage development of accredited entry-level master's program, of which, you see that those are placed. Another thing that was going to come in 1996, our certificate and qualification, secondary level of graduate trainers. And the proposal was that there would be a clinical instructor, for that role, there would be a preceptor CAQ by 2000, program director CAQ by 2001. That never went into those kind of things. Another thing was to add pharmacology and pathology, which was pretty controversial. Long way from it. A few other fun ones. Subcontract accreditation of advanced or professional, post-professional master's programs to the JRCAT. NADA also on accreditation. Now they are actually about some post-professional Katie. Create an education council. It's now the executive committee on education or the EC Thanksgiving meeting. I love this next bullet, and I think it's helpful to realize this was 19 years ago. Multidisciplinary education. We now call this for professional. Combining athletic training, and I put in quotes here because this is simply out of the with nursing, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and other appropriate baccalaureate-level allied health professionals. Well, nursing is all over the spectrum, but the others on that list, nobody's at the level. They've all moved on and done so ahead of us. By no means is our change simply an attempt to keep up with Joneses more to it, but there is a chance that we don't change by treating on physiology. And I understand what happens to an organism environment with that. What happens is I love the last one here, encouraging athletic training education programs to call themselves athletic. From there, jump forward to 2000. In 2012, a similar document was released by the 12 Directions in Athletic Training and document. It was approved by the Board of Directors at the NHLA meeting 3 years ago. It was intended to update, reference heavily 1996 recommendations, and it had 14 recommendations. They added the 15th one a year later. The 15th has to do with post-professional education. I'm not going to go through all 14, but I want to hit a few that I think are important. Recommendation number 2, NATA was strategic, I'll talk about that in a moment. Should do a detailed analysis, completed by June of 14, on the most appropriate professional degree for athletics. The white paper that was the moment came out of it. Recommendation 5 down here was moving post-professional education from NATA. Recommendation 3, interprofessional education should be a required component. Remember we talked about 16 years earlier? Yes. Some of that. I'll give you another one. Silos. 4 out of 5 training education programs are not housed academically in administration. They're housed in exercise psychology, physical education, and many are there only for their profession, even if they're more fit performance focused. As a result, housed language and culture with a lot of other healthcare providers potentially even have been a barrier. Let's see. Number 6, residencies, specializations, and special certifications. Residents, we already have specialization, specialty certifications that NATA is collaborating on. C. They are proposing that specialty be in orthopedic patient, and the other be in manual therapy. I struggle with that because it's really important that as a care professional, structure ourselves in ways make sense. When you look at specialties and professions, we have residency and certification. And beyond that, you go into fellowship. For example, I do a residency in orthopedics, and then later go on to a fellowship. I think, this is Mark Merrick talking now, but I think things manual therapy probably more of a subject within the community. but there's some work that's happened there. Bottom one down here, it should examine issues surrounding transition clinical practice, both prior and after support. How do we use technology who are also ready, independent, and confident in general practice situation potential? By the way, when you read the literature across all of them, everybody struggles with practice. The reality is, it's not the healthcare, it's a new graduate. I don't care what profession you enter, the first 3 months of a job are a big transition learning experience for your confident person. I see sometimes being headaches for us all, thinking that somebody who just graduated could be fully ready for it. If that's our goal, it's a different education program. But perhaps another way to look at it is first jobs, you have a period of mentor like they do in professional. An area for conversation. The white paper came out in 2013, and this paper recommended professional math. It was commissioned by NATA through the ECE. They put out a call for volunteers. Who volunteered was accepted as part of the project. 40 people who were on the white paper. They broke us in 2 groups. I was one of the authors. I was on the primary writing group. And there were primary writing group. And the rest was on a reviewing and background to work through this. And this was before my days at Katie Commission. We elected Katie while I was. This came out in December of 2013. It's actually the third time this was investigated. It's not a new idea. The white paper was interesting. I don't know a better way to sit than lambasting people. It has been held up by other people, but I think its purpose is charged. Here's the reasons that these are taken from the white paper. Reasons why we look at it. One, healthcare environment is complex, and we need a different level of education. There's certainly a growing need for athletic training specifications outcomes. It seems glaringly obvious like that. We want to do things like parity outcomes back pain versus, you know what? We don't have outcomes, let alone those break it out by the struggle. Certainly, there's an expanding scope of knowledge, skills, and abilities, trying to make sure you cover all the things and create a grip crunch. And certainly, need to ensure a proper professional alignment with our peer healthcare professionals. Both integral healthcare is not just determined. If we're only a professional healthcare team, it's a big piece. The charge to that working group is to make a recommendation, purpose of the white paper, to come to a conclusion and say, this is what we need. It was not intended to be a comprehensive literature review or a comprehensive review of all the programs. The charge group was their recommendation, exactly what it did. That hasn't been shared for widely, but that led a lot of confusion. If you haven't read the white paper, we'll move now, but still some interesting reasons. There were 11 reasons why it was important. So that's sort of how we got there. So here's where we are today. The Athletic Training Strategic Alliance, Strategic Alliance is a joint effort between the Board of Certification, KD, the NATA, and the NATA Research. We have the certifying group, the educational creditor, the member organization, the research group, coming together on dual areas of work, things that affect your profession. And as an alliance, each group weighing everything we have available to us, decision we level 3. So things went into that. Certainly the white paper was a good starting point. By no means a good starting point. We had 2 years of attending district meetings and other meetings and dialogue. We had an online solicitation comments. We had pretty extensive, we had a lot of things. Some of those were interesting and entertaining.
One person referred to me as Jack Ruth.
One comment I'm still trying to understand was that this is the reason for the war. I think they meant the Revolution War. I don't know. I'm very confused. But a lot of the comments were actually thoughtful, constructive. There were some that were in favor of removes, but against. There is a summary of that open comment and actually has got appendices of all the comments. It's a long read, but it's an entertaining. Healthcare Economist Report, NATA commissioned a healthcare economist to sign it.
Think about that. Non-athletic trainer.
That's pretty amazing things that found in that report. Things like entry-level salaries for athletic staff 16 years. And part of the reason for that is I had a commission. And I'm there with Mark Larson, a student contacted. Apparently there was a Division I staff job for 27. And a student wanted to know if they got an appropriate salary in one time. 14 years. And we take those jobs that can come. The Economist report was kind of interesting. It also talked about 25-hour training, low-paying, time-limited training, GA. That's not good viable for us. ECE has a committee who's going to look at and trying to understand what they are, how they're built, why they're a better alternative. You can find a lot of the information that was used on the AP Strategic Alliance webpage, the URL here. And we'll get this PowerPoint put up on it as well. To find this information, you have to do a little pull-down and look at each document. They're hidden. And I say hidden because I have a hard time finding anything on the website, but I'm not a website. Other fact, compelling evidence tells us that there are better outcomes than by training education. Are achieved at a master's level. I'll show you a few of them here. But I think elements of quality improvement that we've talked about for a while are easier to this level. The bottom bullet here for the degree change part of this choice, and that's to try to prepare providers with success. And the degree is not merely an elevation, it's part of the bigger change. And there are several things that kind of practice in the healthcare community. The degree is a piece. The content that in our culture of embracing health, all those things are. So the standard that is agreed to, which is the degree standard within our profession standards, the underlined portion here is the proposed language.
And this is actually out for open comment, so that's open to anyone and everyone to go on and comment on information.
But it's simply, KD-accredited professional athletic training programs must result in the granting of a master degree in training.
Do you notice that it doesn't say at least a master's degree? That was
the commission, in looking at this, did not think that an entry-level doctoral degree right now is the smart decision. Create a lot of confusion with professionals. Frankly, the nature of doctoral degree is really about opinion, and we didn't think that that's quite the step we're at. There's also a proposed timeline for this. It's also up the open. The Reader's Digest version of this language is that 7 years from now, you cut off entry into baccalaureate programs. So you don't have to have your graduate program complete approved and graduate students, but you'll no longer be able to enroll students in baccalaureate programs. And this has not been adopted. This is not for open comment right now. And we anticipate acting on this the August meeting. So that open comment, it's an open comment survey. You can access it from the KD website. It's also been announced in the promotions, newsletter, the email program. But it is our normal practice to put that out comment and do ensure those comments adopted. This open comment will have been open for about just over a month. And it will close here at the end of July. So going forward, we believe the things that change about athletic training education need to happen independent. The degree change alone, nothing else, would merely be degree inflation. That would be a mistake. It's part of a bigger change. Take a look at that. I showed you this slide earlier. This is a revisit. Strong scientific foundational.
We need to have similar science to other members to be a part of, that we already are a part of. We have to have similar background and language, similar preparation, acceptance.
Clinically competent. I think work to do on the practice. I don't have all the answers, ideas, and thoughts. We'll get into those here in the have a place in healthcare. I'm sorry, one athletic training is career. We've meant a place in healthcare as a level two provider, sort of big end goal of all of this. And those core competencies. Those core competencies, I've got down here at the bottom of periods of full time.
I fully expect our students to come back with a recommendation to us. Athletic trainings in their professional preparation have a period to have full clinical valid coursework.
Right now, far too many athletic training students graduate from programs in athletic training practice, like practice setup, practice coverage, practice, because that's in a class. You don't necessarily see doing things like interfacing with insurance, working billing, doing interprofessional meeting with other people.
A lot of things that go into the practice of athletics in this history of literature.
We think we need a full-time period of engagement. One of the nice group models on the organ, including this, that's probably a part of it. Certainly strong foundational scientific knowledge. We'll talk about that. Faculty areas specific expertise.
I mentioned 11 earlier. 11 has standard quality. Another standard just went into effect. This is 30. Standard 30 requires programs have ratios 2 faculty members. If you look at the spectrum of healthcare programs, universities, it's laughable when you're struggling and concerned about having faculty. We have a lot of growing up.
And not only do we need to grow up, but we need to reach the point where our faculty content is present. A single faculty member who tries to come with the help of a few adjuncts. So dedicated faculty is an area that we continue to grow. Conclusion of those core competencies, patient-centered care.
Evidence-based practice, we're really starting to get up to that. And we're
one of the few professions now who has evidence practice continuing education. There are very few who actually have that. Interprofessional education is a critical.
We must learn part of health.
Now, in my day job, well, I'm not wearing my KD name tag, I am the program director,
and the reason the job I created this program housing.
And I thought that's where athletic training belonged, and it does. It's been a very good experience.
We first, it was like being invited to a formal dinner, eating with your hands. We didn't understand culture. There are so many things that we have back up their training that athletic trainers have often never.
Interprofessional education is a very important doing that. And if we're going to fully function as a professional team, we have to learn that embrace that culture. Quality improvement.
We're starting to things like this in the VOC. Regenerative Services in Tech.
A lot of students have, a lot of educators have. Athletic training is delivered in a healthcare facility, and we need our facilities to have care requirements rather than things of cultural shift transition to make. Integration of technology. We struggle as professionals with technology. Not just procedure technologies like musculoskeletal, but electronic medical.
A lot of athletic trainers in electronic medical records, something like injury zone,
as opposed to something that they fit compliant medical records. You fit a compliant medical records, share that and forth between the other. We have a ways to go in using healthcare technology. We haven't begun this practice. Other professional standards here. Alignment with school health. One of those 1996 recommendations was that we align with schools of health professions wherever possible.
And 19 later, 20 for program housing, but not. And I think really
administratively at many institutions make a lot of sense for athletic training to have always been and where we have grown up historically.
But I think that it is an integral preparing to be part of the health team. They're not associated with, trained with, trained from,
and sharing experiences with other members. I think that we are looking at this really, really hard. I don't know how we get
Now, one approach would be we implement a standard that says you can help related.
Maybe a middle step is if your institution has one, you need to be a part of it. If you're not, you need to justify why that's better to students.
That's a hard step for us to take, but I don't know culturally that we get where we need, we don't work. So that's an area that the standards committee is looking at.
Certainly practitioners who function as a mid-level provider.
Function as a mid-level provider, we want to get others to do, but we also have to do ourselves.
We struggle with, and I'll get to that here on the next. As is always our practice, all new standards, anything that grows out of these, we believe in exploring, would go out for public comment with varying implementations appropriate.
So if the standards thinks that this is what needs to happen, we're going to look at what timeline for making. Some of those changes absolutely happen before we graduate. Some will probably come with that. Some we won't be able to repeat until afterwards. But you should expect the standards way to bring that continuing to change on a regular basis.
Those of us who have been program directors for a few too many years, remember when standards changed every 5 years, the elected.
Now that's really the way it's done. We have a comprehensive view of standards,
but we also have the ability to do administrative
changes standards we need.
So if we want to improve the clarity or wording without changing the spirit of existing standards,
we also have the ability to add or revise those standards compelling so.
For example, if a blood test came out today that would properly diagnose concussion, it would probably need to become part of our education training equipment within 5 years. So we have the ability to adapt as we. Part of that is professional knowledge.
We have the programs, and we also have a document now called Edge of Competence.
For those of you who are keeping score at home,
409 education competence. That's down from 686.
Ben's over here shaking his head.
You remember the show 600 and over 10 kills.
Gosh, that's way too many.
Our approach to date has been to make education competence things
you have a competency that says you have to be able to do
orthopedic assessment of the ankle, knee, hip, and you get the point. That's why we
as a barrier, because if
we need to approach cataloging, the thing to do, it's not on the catalog, you don't.
And that really limits our ability to adapt it to the healthcare environment. What I would envision is rather than 439 of these,
we're probably going to have something more.
And it's going to be things that are worded like athletic trainers do orthopedic assessment, diagnosis, care for musculoskeletal problems. Worded much more broadly, it's a lot more flexibility. That opens up things including. I would challenge you to think a little bit about what kind of practitioner. You know, athletic trainers sometimes struggle with where do we fit. Certainly, we do some medicine piece, but as we try to align ourselves as rehab profession, try to cover rehab from the market, but we can only have a piece of work.
I would argue that whatever I do as a practitioner, whatever just walked in the door, really the primary care.
We see ill patients, we see injured patients, patients who need counseling, referral, patients who need,
we do a little bit of everything.
And if we're going to function really in the primary care role, we need to have a primary care system.
And there are pieces of that skill set that are largely because we have decided we don't want to hold our pounds and do things that talk to our physician partners on
the commission.
They say things to us like, why do I have my practice athletic training clinic after the kid an allergy shot? Or, you know what, we need a blood draw on this person so we can get some diagnostic testing. Well, how do we do that? I send them over to clinic or some health? Why can't we do that? There's a lot of basic primary kinds of skills not having competence, and I think we're going to get a hard look at them.
You know, I had a doc who once commented to me that, you take a kid to the emergency room, have a laceration.
The doc, suture tech. Now he becomes a tech, a little before our class. Why in the world do we not have memory wound case?
How do you see an athletic? Why is casting and durable medical equipment something that is a fringe practice? These are core skills. We've asked this professional knowledge steering
that's made up, it's not Acadia, it's an alliance.
It has VOC and Acadia and NTA folks on it. Take a look at those, figure out what skill sets we need, and how do we write the standards in a way that best enables us to be on a footing in our markets. That's going to likely involve some new knowledges and skills, and we need your input and your help. If you have thoughts and ideas, you know what, we really need this, we shouldn't have that, this is an issue because of state regulation and this, things we need to share.
I think doing the failing some because it is hard doesn't give much sense.
I think that we have some hard things to do, and I think some of these things are worth rolling up our sleeves. So what's next from here? Expected decisions on implementation timeline, we've mentioned that, coming up in our August meeting. Again, we'll always have open comment when futures come out. Professional knowledge, I've just gone exhaustively. That's all professional education.
I would get just a couple of things, post-professional residency. People often realize these.
We do have residency education, and the goal of a residence program is produce a clinical specialist. In some professions, it also achieves the goal of being a trained practice.
The primary goal of a residence program is to provide special certification ability,
and that's what our residencies do. So they are to improve patient care, and specialization is part of a universal thing predicated on patient. So residencies need to focus on patient care. Emphasis of education and training built on patient-based specialization. Patient-based specialization usually is centered around a population,
like pediatrics or occupational,
or perhaps a system or disease focus, like orthopedic cardiology.
It does not make sense for us to create residency programs, do not make us the health team, that make it harder to integrate.
So I would argue to you that if we create ongoing residencies and specialty certifications, start by aligning them, then we don't need a specialization or residency field. But the ones that we choose should be logical to others and help teams. So the entry-level knowledge broad.
Teach you a little bit about
specialized knowledge at the end of a residency is deep narrow. So it is not more of the same, truly not in depth. They should develop clinicians who can do a lot of things. And this is some standardized residency training language that we have picked up here from hospital pharmacists. Solving complex patient problems.
Have you ever noticed your patients don't look like the example textbook? Dan can work on that. But you have to have the ability to complex and complex problems.
Practicing with best evidence, integrated practice, using patient values as a piece of that, contributing to the literature through research scholarship, things like helping document out the care of the divide, measure and disseminate information about clinical outcomes I've mentioned, enhancing patients' health-related quality of care.
These are all the things really belong to this program.
So they should be focused on patient-based needs. Again, you've already mentioned that's populations. Residency training is rigorous and requires a significant
amount. Not everybody is the care able to program.
And residency programs need not be.
In fact, the residency have a residency on neither. They're about practice, not about academic.
So they're not more GAs. They're not on-the-job training or transition practice. They're not only graduate-level programs, essentially. Not restricted clinician, master, mentor, residency. It's not a degree. It's a specialty. They are not administration or teaching focused. You couldn't do a residency education based group. And they're not required for your VOC certificate.
I'd go a step further and state for residents things like college after ranking most of our training.
And it's not necessarily a specific policy. Mentor-driven advanced clinical practice.
These need to be led by our practitioner, by our academic.
Post-professional education. As I mentioned to you before, we voted commission. Professional degrees specifically will be the master's. So we are not entertaining application entry-level doc program.
Future changes the point considered,
but this is where we are today. There's a lot of discussion about what goes into post-grad education, what is its role in the world of entry. We coordinated a discussion with President Lewis. The University of Idaho is putting on a summit in August in Idaho to be a participant in that panel. We'll be talking about this at our accreditation conference.
We don't allow answers, but there are some things that we've identified to do.
Some of those things are working with programs and partners have a shared vision for post-professional education. What is its mission?
Job to do. Is it to produce a scholar?
Is it to produce a practice
leader or a practice?
Is it to produce an independent practice
or a scholar clinician?
We have to flesh through those things and figure out what are the goals.
There could be more than one. And there may be more than one kind of degree. That means, for example, traditionally, the PhD research degree that produces a scholar
who advances the science theory behind it,
not clinical practice.
Some would argue that the PhD could be produced scholars, produce practice manager, practice leader. There's a lot of discussion on this. There's a really nice article on this in the NHTA News. You might find that a good read if you're interested. Again, professional education part of purpose continuum, education piece in that definition of purpose. We're working to start with purpose. Once we have purpose, we structure. There's a lot of discussion going there. We have a lot of answers. I mentioned the accreditation conference.
Accreditation conference started last year. It sold out very quickly. It passed about 150.
We expected to have maybe 50 to 70, and we cut it off 170 and had people. Very, very full meeting. So we changed venue, if you went to last year, and we're really crowded. We got a bigger room at a bigger place, still in Tampa. We did a very nice facility in town. And the opening reception is going to be at the University of South Florida's Advanced Medical Learning Simulation, which is one of the leading medical simulations that are going to do all kinds of fun stuff. So I would highly recommend accreditation conference who are administrators, program directors, coordinators, chairs. I would also remind you that this is about accreditation program, not practice analysis. You don't get CEUs for attending.
And as a result, you don't use your community agencies and your provosts
about funding you.
By the way, in other professions, they have these accreditation and that required program directly.
So ours is available, by no means required, but by all accounts, it was pretty useful. Really got into use about PT education program. So with that, I have talked way too long. So I'm here to answer questions, listen, and dialogue with you. And
I don't know how much time you have. I have all day. I'm done here. I can check in. So questions, thoughts, and that. Don't have a number yet, but I can't even word that. Let's say broaden the category, but yeah. That's a great question. And in looking across, it hasn't had that effect on the community professionals. Because the reality is, companies don't really drive. It gets driven by the class of material. A lot of instructors are trying to hear you, and wind up in textbook or course. And textbooks aren't suddenly cut out a whole lot of stuff. In fact, it offers you to include some don't include now because we don't have a specific. So I think it can talk, but here's what I think will happen. I mentioned we already have quality in athletic education. We're really good programs, and they're going to get better, and they're going to have a lot of fun. The programs at the bottom who are struggling can include everything we have now. If they are under-resourced, undervalued, and as I mentioned, the mission and vision is no longer just a program with coming to clients. It's not stand out in front and carry it. Hey, come on, let's go take the gloves off, throw the record, freedom. Next question, we also have a little.
Okay, ours is up for 2021.
Okay. If you are a baccalaureate program, you have a couple of potential cases. One is that you train to become a master program. And the process for that is called substance on our website. It involves a very focused part of being self-study during the program. It's not a self-study, a little mini self-study on just the federal effective study. So you would submit your substance along with fee that covers our costs of those and you work through the program will already start. You have some options on timing. You can, if your comprehensive review is called the normal self-study, if your comprehensive review is going in the period, you can do it at the time of the review. That actually saves you 50% on cost of substance they already have structures in the review. You may also do it independently. For example, my own program's comprehensive review is in 1718, and I don't want substance. We'll see. That's what my dean. What my dean thinks sometimes changes week. But you can couple them, or you can, if you want, we will also, then the ability of our past handle, if you wanted to do your self-change, let you do the review of it early. We wouldn't let you delay it, because your accreditation was specific. But more than about 1 year, now, we brace you for this. We had 37 sites this year, not in 16, but in 17. We are going to be, and it is foreseeable to allow programming stuff into our committee, make it look like we had a review this week. So get your stuff in, get in line, so that we can get you through this. I don't think comedy, all 100 considered as programs, they'll come in very, but early bird gets the work. Other thoughts, questions? One question I usually get, talking to some of the knowledge boxes, I don't practice athletic, I didn't learn any of that stuff. How do I get up to speed? Well, I think our first step is we're going to have some program train our education program how to add things to the current. But I imagine how did you just pop up for a program, current practicing some of those new skills. So if you're a program administrator and you're entrepreneurial, you might look at this as a very nice continuing education opportunity program. Other questions or thoughts? All right, well, let's go ahead.
Your program.
Okay. So there are different ways you can do a traditional professional master program have. It typically looks like a year, usually that involves some. So a true graduate entry program, you have a baccalaureate degree. There are a number of institutions who are talking about hybridized programs, a 2+3 or a 2+2 kind of format. My own is looking pretty hard at all where we would make do a 5-year period. There are pros and cons to models. For example, to make that work in the senior undergraduate year, students start cooking. And my graduate school said, you down like you have to petition to get. Means, I'm not able to go in next year. Well, at least in pop. They might have finished bachelor's and enrolled for a true graduate year. Some people have talked about doing hybridized programs that also have a post-baccalaureate entry. I think my team would like that a whole lot. Ways to build it, and we have been telling you how to structure a program. And you need to do it in a way that prepares the sources. The goal, however, is to come out of that with all the things. Another question sometimes related to that is the BOC exam change. The BOC exam is based on analysis current practice, current data. But what happens is we continue to add some of those things will work their way into practice settings, probably in specifically ready for state have some specific. But as it becomes a more mainstream thing in practice, show up on the practice analysis. I have always been an advocate that education needs to practice rather than practicing trained belief. So I think when you educate broadly, then common practice, I think that's how you see it. Other ideas, thoughts, questions? Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me be very clear. Graduate assistants are something that we envision trying out, not that we are mandated trying. We have no purview on how you hire your staff and what you make staffing on. I think that you'll certainly see students who are LATs or enrolled professional programs where some are already. Can they serve as a graduate assistant? We don't let you be paid for the kind of experience toward reaching potential. So I think that would be a barrier to try to work our way. And it might be a bizarre, like, time of the work graduates and have time that's part of clinical education. I don't know that it's an ideal model. But go ahead. Supervision is required of all students, professional education. So they would still have to be five faculty. And I don't know in the future. You're seeing the training educational scale going direction with these going to be. I think there's been separation. But I think that it's an area that's very static. We don't really run into in other places. And as a result, we do have a commissioner from Texas. I wish she would be able to really be much more conversant on this. But I think that the unique culture of athletic training education and life, I don't know this. Yeah. As a good partner, as Katie has added this practice, I would think that, first of all, license of practice, I would think those experience probably the educational program, but we in the education program, the right to mentor our students. Frankly, it's probably more of a matter than the cage is going to come. Yes, sir. 16 years. We do know, obviously, reports are pretty lengthy. We do know that master degrees earn more than others. clearly as evidence suggests, the masters higher earnings. So will a master's degree raise salaries? Probably for those who wouldn't otherwise have them. For those who have a master's in short term. And I'll be honest with you, the salary is an effect to do is put this in the health environment be a part of that. And as we're a part of that team, that's the only avenue that really gets us. So will it increase our salaries? Do I think we can change salaries with health? Other thoughts, questions? That's very big and broad. Things are being done by the members. On the educational topic, we're on vision of the education. But certainly there's a lot of advocacy going on with NHS. They know are working hard. By the way, NHS is the biggest ever Hill or Capitol Day. Next year's convention is in Baltimore. Bus ride. So we're envisioning large numbers of athletic trainers visit the legislature this year. The legislatures are all going to run. I know that there's a lot of work, a lot of dialogue going on with third party. There's also a lot of work on interprofessional practice, well, peer professional, certainly all the best. The reality is to get ranked, we have to pair then have, and that is one of our bigger barriers, is that a lot of people in medicine don't know you are trained, how you can participate. We have to start changing that educationally. So that is native. So that's our side. But across the bigger spectrum, I'm on the education fairly. More questions, thoughts? All right, I'm starting to exhaust you folks. So let me thank you very much for your time and for listening today. And if I can help you in any way or question or concern or want to share something, please contact me. My email is really hard, merrick@eme.net. Thank you very much.